station is Camden Town, Edgware Branch. Change here for all stations to High Barnet.
So this is Camden. We never frequented up here too often, did we?
No.
No.
It is an RC.
Was when we were 15. Me with my emo hair, my black nails. Those types of boots. But not at nearly 30. This is the third episode we've done in London. First one was Ryan Riley of Life Kitchen, who has his book, which he discussed Onset podcast, coming out in the next couple of weeks, which is worth looking at and listening to his story about how he offers cookery classes for people living with cancer. And he's a hotshot at the moment, basically, because of it all, and he's fantastic. And then, oh, Poppy's lovely. Fish and chips. And then the other one was Anna Haw, the amazing Irish chef. It's a fun episode if you haven't heard it as well. I always say that story. You know, it's the TVAM building.
I know that, yes.
And if you go over to where it says Camden Dock over there, you'll see the old egg cups on top of the building.
I think it's Camden Lock, no?
It looks like a big D. Oh, no, it's actually an L. Never mind. Camden Lock.
Iconic Camden Lock.
I told you, we've never come up here.
It's quite a touristy area, but also quite a eclectic area as well,
yeah.
So there's old and young,
a bit of everything here.
Yeah, there's a real energy in this area, in the north of the city centre.
Mm-hmm.
And we are here to speak to another Irish chef.
Yes.
Who has upped sticks and come over here to add to the industry over here in a really exciting first outpost for them. Any guesses?
Well, for one, he's a chef. Number two, his name is Adrian, and many people know him as Chef Adrian.
Yeah.
So from Cavan to Camden, really.
And I think this is a kind of, I guess you could call it, coming of age. He hasn't ever opened his own place before, and he's opening it in the absolute monster that is London. So I'm really, really intrigued to hear more and to hear his plans and to ask him all about it.
And even when we were discussing it, because we were talking to him in person a couple of months back, and he was telling us all about these plans, the passion he has for this project just oozed from him. So naturally we had to come to Camden and shove a microphone in his face and find out all about it.
Just before we start our chat with Chef Adrian on this episode of Chew the Fat, we want to start by saying a huge thank you to everyone so far who has donated towards the cost of this podcast via the Buy Me a Coffee website. It is really, really helping us with the little things that rack up when we're recording episodes, like equipment, hosting, travel, car parking charges, train tickets, constant coffees, and even the constant supply of batteries for our recorder.
It really does eat them up. If you've enjoyed listening to all or any of the episodes to date, and there's about 40 of them available to download and enjoy, please feel free to tip us the cost of a flat white or a cortado or two via buymeacoffee.com/chewthefat, and you can help keep the production of this 100% free podcast going. Of course, be sure to subscribe to the feed so whenever we release a new episode, you won't miss it. Now, let's kick off with this week's chat.
Hi, I'm Adrian Martin, and, oh geez, what am I? Good question. I'm a chef, soon to be restaurateur, and just cabin man.
It's such a different world here.
Yeah.
Like, I've only started, I moved, well, I haven't moved really, I'm still, I go back home every weekend.
Right.
So I'm back tomorrow evening.
Okay.
And then I come back on Monday. So I spend the weekends here.
Yeah.
Or weekends in Dublin, in the apartment in Dublin.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just mental.
Aren't you exhausted?
I'm running on like literally adrenaline.
Yeah.
Literally I'm running on adrenaline. So it's like go at the moment. Yeah. It was stressful.
You're close to a finishing line, at least.
I don't think it finishes. Just starts.
That's just the starting line.
Yeah.
So the stadium is ready, and you're just like, okay, I still have to run a race.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'll tell you what though, I've been really well organized with kind of suppliers and stuff.
Yeah.
Because this has been delayed twice now, so it's meant to open firstly on the 12th of January, and then it was moved to 14th, which is tomorrow, and it's nowhere near ready. And now it's the 2nd of March.
Okay, so
it's constant
changing.
Delays. Yeah, yeah.
And is there a chance it could be pushed even further out?
I don't think so, because the builders are saying, because I'm on site all week, and last week I've been painting and decorating, and they've been like, if they delay over the 2nd, they start getting penalty, so they actually have to pay to stay on site and finish the project.
Okay. Great incentive.
Where it hurts in the wallet.
So the kitchen's been put in tonight. They're working overnight now on the project to get it done. And my dining room and stuff is being kind of finished off. So it's literally ready for carpet.
Yeah.
And the guy that's doing my carpet is like, 1 hour, I'll do it in 1 hour. And I was like, okay, yeah, but just let's put the kitchen in first so they don't wreck the carpet, you know?
Put plastic down.
Yeah, and all my chairs. So I have my chairs organized from a company called Cult Furniture. Mm. So they're in a storage unit at the moment. My tables are in my room. My room is full of tables. Yeah, it's all over the place. And I took a storage unit during the week for all my... Because my son and my brother came over on the ferry, so I took all my equipment. So I've been collecting equipment for years.
Yeah.
So my Thermomixes, Paco Jets.
Yeah.
I've got all pots and pans and... Absolutely everything.
You can buy them again if you have them and they're all good, especially a thing like a Thermomix.
Yeah, it's expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, my Paco Jet gave up as well, so that's like $5,000. So
what?
To get a new one, so it's
spare change.
Yeah, spare change.
When it comes to restaurants, it's spare change, I guess.
Yeah,
sure.
No, definitely not. Like, to be honest with you, I've gotten away now nicely on this. Like, this is all my own life savings put into this project. Mm. So it's kind of like, I suppose I've been saving for the last number of years, just putting money away to try and do my own project like this.
Mm.
I actually looked at restaurants in Dublin, all around Dublin. So I looked at myself and my dad, we looked at about 7 or 8 different places. And every time I look at a business, it's like a full kind of overview of it. And then I send it off to my accountant and he says, yes, no, maybe, you know, and each scenario ended up either just breaking even, making a little bit of money, or losing money. So each of the scenarios in Dublin was kind of too risky. So he'd actually recommended, he's like, why don't you go look at London? He says you might get some opportunities there with your own work as well. And I came to, my book got released here, and they contacted me, Camden Market contacted me, and they were like, you might have something here for you, what do you think?
Wow.
And I was like, what? And I was like, what are you doing contacting me? Like, so I came down and I looked at the space that they had and they kind of described what they were building.
Yeah.
And it's just really like, so it's been March last year since I began on this project.
Oh, wow. Whole year now.
It's a whole year project. Yeah, it's a full year in the making,
The space is just beyond the train station there and it's all the kind of container units, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's a bit like if anyone has been to Pop in Brixton.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
Box Park and everything. Yeah. It's very similar to that kind of vibe. It looks very colourful and big and you're straight in there, aren't you?
So my idea is that I suppose the whole market concept is funky and it's unusual and sustainable and my concept was that it's not really been done that a fine dining kind of scenario has been put into this.
Yeah.
So I'll bring you down. I'll walk down with you afterwards and show you.
Yeah,
but we're doing like coving. We're doing really nice classy decor. Mm. Furniture is beautiful.
Yeah.
Tablecloth, linen on tables.
Right. Camden won't know what's hit it.
It's like a contrast from the outside in.
Yeah.
So you walk through the door and there's so many people already that have walked in. Even the builders are like, what?
Fancy.
It's like, what's going on? You know? So it's... yeah, that's kind of the effect I want.
covers are you having inside it?
It's 26. So it's 26 seats. Yeah. It is small. It's two containers welded together, basically. And then they've what have they done? They've put like insulation all around it, and then they've plasterboarded it, and yeah, it's all kind of set to go.
Have you a name yet?
Yeah, it's called Wildflower. Nice. Yeah. So it's basically, I suppose the idea of this is Wildflower is kind of very close to my family and friends' heart. So we had a friend back in Cavan. His name's James McManus. So there's a triathlon named after him in the area.
Yeah.
And he had a company called Wildflower in the area, which is to do with cycling tours and tourism in Ireland. Mm. And we used to be all involved. So as kids, we used to all have the jackets. He used to take us surfing most weekends in Rosnaula. Mm. He kind of based on that. So I suppose the name kind of, I had asked permission from the family to make sure it was all right. And they were just happy for me to carry on the name because the company hasn't been doing anything for years now. Yeah. So I wanted to carry on the name. And it represents kind of that outdoorsy wilderness kind of vibe. Mm. And so each of our dishes is going to be a forage ingredient in each dish. So we're dealing with Bello Wild Foods, a supplier here who will forage everything. Irish beef. So I'm dealing with Campbell Brothers, who are based up in Edinburgh. Mm. And the guy is actually from Mullagh in County Cavan, who I'm dealing with. And I was like, you're like from 10 minutes away from my home place. I was like, this is crazy. See, like, where would you get it?
There's this crazy idea about Ireland that everyone knows each other. Yeah. And then it's the second you talk to someone and you're like, no, we don't all know each other. We don't...
I know your family.
It's far too small.
I know. So he's sourcing us Irish beef, Irish pork, Irish lamb.
Great.
And they will dry age whatever amount of time you want. And they've been great, Campbell's to deal with.
Yeah.
And our fish supplier is...
Are you aging in house or are they aging it for you?
They're aging it for us, So we just give them a time limit and then they'll age for whatever, yeah. Nice. So. It's nice. I have Daily Fish then. They're just around the corner here in Camden.
Yeah.
So they can source whatever you want. So we're using Carlingford oysters. We're trying to use as much Irish produce as possible. Yeah. So it's kind of the idea. And then it's, I really did want to do it in Ireland. I'll be honest with you. I really did want to have a restaurant in Ireland. Yeah. But look, it's... I don't want to be a broke man either. I don't want to be walking around struggling with money, and I don't want to be that person that opens a restaurant and then next thing he has to close it in a year's time. There's no point putting so much effort and money into it and then having to close it. So I thought, look, it's a great opportunity to work with Camden Markets, the PR team they have behind it, the opportunities. I'm opening this on a shoestring, don't get me wrong. I took out a very little loan. And the rest of it is just money I've saved up and I've worked with as well. So, yeah.
It is mad to think, because a lot of people, obviously we lived here for a while and there's a perception that London is expensive. And we've just gone through kind of craziness with elections and everything in the last couple of weeks in Ireland. And obviously the cost of living has been a huge factor, and a lot of restaurants have been saying about insurance, VAT and all that type of stuff. As a scene over here, and obviously it's all very early days, have you seen a huge difference in things like that, insurance and rates and everything? Yeah.
So my insurance for the year is 2.8, and I quoted the same in Ireland. It's not more than quadruple the price.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. And VAT is 20% here, but I suppose you have to charge VAT.
Yes.
You know, so you just charge VAT on top of your menu price. Mm-hmm. You know, so like. At the end of the day, if you're not doing it, if you don't have your numbers right, you know, your VAT is not going to match up. You're not going to be able to repay your VAT, and then you're going to lose money that way. So your numbers have to really work out, and you really have to figure it out. So that's when my dad and my accountant really helped me out on numbers wise, because at the end of the day, it's not my game. I'm not all to do with numbers. No, yeah.
Get them to cook. See
how that gets on. Yeah, exactly.
And plus, roaring success.
Yeah, and like for negotiating and stuff, my dad's great. I'm this big believer. So we have this saying in my family. It's like, and it's like, I know a lot of people know the saying, it's the wheel that squeaks the most gets the oil. So we're like squeakers. So we've asked, if you don't ask the question, you won't get it.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing about working with Camden Markets. So like, they're putting a lot of work into this unit, like kitchen-wise, kitchen equipment. They're you know, fitting out a lot of stuff for us to my spec.
Yeah.
I'm getting away with opening the restaurant here on 35k, like.
Wow.
Yeah. So like, there's very little places you could do that, and there's 22 million people yearly come out of that tube station. Mm. Like, we're in the second busiest tourist destination in the UK.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's like, how?
Well, isn't it one of the only stations in London that has a it restricts entry in and out, or out, or in, is it? I can't remember.
It
doesn't allow entry at certain times of an evening or something that. You can only get out of Camden Station, but you can't get in, type of thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Come for dinner and saw it afterwards.
Yeah.
It is crazy.
Yeah. Irish, obviously, ethos, inspiration, ingredients, name, all of that stuff. How have you chosen your staff? Or have you any Irish staff, or yeah?
Yeah, my head chef actually is his name's Ruben Aguela Bell, so he's actually Spanish. Mm. He was sous chef of Petrus.
Mm.
He worked in with Gordon Ramsay there for years. Mm. El Bulli, he worked in for a full year for free.
Wow.
Yeah. So like, he's a serious experience. I did want a head chef that has amazing experience that we can kind of work on, kind of recipes and stuff together. We're currently just actually hiring chefs at the moment. Now, I've had a lot of Irish chefs apply for jobs, to be honest with you. So yeah, I'd love to have some Irish staff in, definitely. It's very hard to, you know, fully get Irish staff over and trying different things, like even getting accommodation set up with them, or even getting them national insurance numbers and things like that is quite difficult. Ruben will be head of everything, head of the whole game. But when it comes to menu and everything, the two of us will work together on that.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, when Ruben needs days off, I'm in to work, or, you know, vice versa. We're excited. We're gathering together a whole team. He's got quite a few chefs himself that he knows, and, you know, he said maybe there's opportunities to work with them as well. So it's look, we probably, you know, restaurant trade, people leave and go to new places all the time. So I kind of feel like it will be like that for a while, where it'll be finding our feet. We will lose staff, we will gain staff, you know, just to find the right team in place. I just want to make sure that everyone's happy, you know. I just want to make sure that they're comfortable, they're getting paid well. Like, we're offering, Ruben's doing 4.5 days a week. So he'll do 4 days on full, and then a half day, and then every second Sunday he'll have off. As well, same with the restaurant manager. We've Elizabeth Alvarez, her name, she worked at La Rocca Brothers. So she's a front of house manager for the restaurant. And she'll do the same. She'll do 4.5 days, and then every second Sunday she'll have off. And they'll rotate between each other as well, just to make it fair. And then tips thing wise, we want to give everyone an equal share of tips. I think that's only fair. So I don't deal with it. I'm saying, look, it's yours. This is, I want to trust somebody with that to, you know, spread it evenly and be fair to everyone else. So yeah, that's
a good ethos at the beginning and at the heart of it. So yeah, you know, that's all good from there.
Yeah, well, when you work with guys like Nevin Maguire, like, we got an equal share of tip every week.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And it made such a difference. Because some weeks you might come out with, like, you know, 150 quid. Back when I was 14, 15, that was more than my salary.
Exactly.
I was like, this is great, you know, so.
Free money,
So, you know, you appreciate it and you feel like you're appreciated. And we do different things. Like, I've organized to bring staff up to Edinburgh now to meet the meat supplier as well. So we're going up there. Like, flights aren't that expensive.
You should head up there on the sleeper train.
Oh.
What's that like?
Oh my god, it's fabulous.
Is it good?
It's really good.
The sleeper train, I haven't heard of this.
It goes from Euston. Is it every night of the week?
Every night except Saturday, I want to say.
It heads off, what, 9:30?
Half 11. It's between 9:30 and 11:30, and it's only recently been renovated. So when we went on it, it was a bit of a banger, but it was still so lovely. And yeah, you leave at about 11:00, and you get into Edinburgh about 7 a.m. and slowly
chugging up through the country overnight.
You can get breakfast on it, you can have like haggis, neeps, and tatties in the restaurant car, and a wee dram before you go to bed.
Side, you know?
Oh, it's lovely. It's so nice.
And even though you arrive up there bleary eyed at crazy 8:00 in the morning, it's experiential.
I have to try it.
I would, it is a bit expensive, but I would check
and let's have a look.
And it's more sustainable than a flight, but you know, it's also considerably more expensive. But but actually, it's not too bad because I think actually the day train is actually gotten cheaper than ever before as well. I'm not sure. I haven't gotten a train up to there in about 4 years.
It's such a beautiful city, though. It is so beautiful. Yeah. It's one of my favorite cities. Yeah. Some people say architectural-wise, I think it's nicer than Barcelona architectural-wise. Mm. Sometimes I love Edinburgh.
It's a beautiful city, and it's beautiful. Yeah. Scotland in general is just gorgeous. Especially when you get on the sleeper train and you wake in the morning and you're looking out and you just see the most fabulous countryside.
This episode is
sponsored by Scotland. Thank you.
You never know, like tourism Scotland.
Yeah. Are you listening?
They wish. You said just before we started that you've kind of headed home at the weekends and you're here throughout every week.
Yeah.
After you open, are you here throughout the whole time or are you heading home often? How are you planning your time after it opens?
For the next, I suppose, month, I'll be here nearly full time. Yeah. And then I still have all my demos to do. I'm still doing a 6 o'clock show on TV3, so I'm still coming back for that. It's really manageable. I'm a very kind of all over the place person, so I love being in one place and then moving and going to do another thing. And I've always been like that. My dad's like that as well. So it actually really suits me to constantly move around. So I still have the apartment in Dundrum in Dublin. Fiona, my girlfriend, still lives there, you know, so I still have to go see her. Otherwise, I get in trouble.
Well, make sure when I'm editing this, I'll put that first and then there'll be other things second, third, and fourth. Yeah, just remember to do that.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, we've been together for 6 years now.
Yeah.
And we actually travel to Sligo every single weekend. We drive 3.5, nearly 4 hours every Friday and come back on a Sunday. A flight is much shorter than that, you know. So to be honest, I'm probably Ryanair's best customer at the moment.
If only they had a frequent flyer program.
I know. So I started flying actually Heathrow because it's only I can get there from the apartment here in 15 minutes.
Wow.
I can't. Yeah, it's real quick. And Aer Lingus's lounge is lovely. It's really nice. If you pay that a little bit extra, it's nice. So you can go and have a shower and stuff.
Yeah, perfect.
So it's quite nice. Yeah.
The notions here, lounge.
Yeah, I know. Lounge.
You know, cabins, the lounges.
Yeah.
We were saying, have you seen that ad for Aldi with the family from Cavan?
Oh my God!
You peel an orange in your pocket.
My dad had a great like talk about this the last day. We were like. Like we don't sound that bad.
No.
It's like it's typical that they picked the most stereotypical Cavan people ever to do that ad. It was unbelievable. We're like peel an orange from your pocket. Come on, I think Cavan people are scabby. You know.
Every time it comes on, and it comes on.
Frequently,
on RTE, I'd say every third ad is that we always say, Jesus.
That's so bad.
The thick accent on them.
Yeah. I honestly don't know where they found them. They're definitely not. They're definitely actors. They could not. Like, all my family, none of my family sound like that at all.
Well, the next week's guests are the family from the Aldi ad.
Who will have their say?
A right to reply.
I guess I'm interested. You've obviously spent a year organizing this. So in that time, you've probably eaten out over here a lot.
Yeah.
Have you?
Bits and pieces, yeah. I've eaten out quite a lot of places. So I'm obsessed with Gordon Ramsay, like I've always been as a kid. So I've eaten early in all his places around. So yeah, we went to his 3-star, we went to Petrus. I wanted to see what Petrus was like. It was lovely. Odette's is just around the corner here. Yeah. It's Brian Williams. Really, really nice. I've eaten a lot of Asian food, actually.
Yeah.
So even last year, we holidayed quite a lot. So we went to Vancouver last year.
Mm.
And the Asian food scene there is incredible.
Really?
Like the food is some of the best I've ever had. And also, the big trend there is kind of small plates.
Mm.
So it's all small plates. But it's touching that... detail of fine dining, which I thought really, really enjoyed. So all over there. But yeah, here, I'm the whole market. I've nearly eaten the whole Camden Market here.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with Borough Market, so I go there a lot.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I have lots more to see, and there's so much more to see around here. Like last night, we were at a restaurant launch last night.
what's the name?
Gizzy.
Gizzy. We were at that last night. It's so weird. The restaurant launches here are very unusual. They had naked people sprayed in gold walking around serving drinks. Like,
painfully London.
Yeah.
And could you imagine that meeting where it's like, so how will we launch this restaurant? Nudity. Just paint them gold.
Paint them gold.
So I'm you're
imagine the shower.
Okay, wild ideas on the table right now.
Peeling oranges a pop.
Peeling orange. For our launch, it's the whole market launches together, we're doing a special meal. So we have the Mayor of London, and we have the Mayor of Camden. We have the CFO of Camden Market, CEO. We have the owner of Lab Tech as well. They've been giving us all these kind of warnings, so they're literally sending us out these emails about this launch.
Yeah.
So these guys walk, a couple of these, there'll be 8 bodyguards standing outside the restaurants, all this kind of big rigmarole. So we'll do a tasting menu for them and introduce them to the restaurant and stuff. I'm more interested in doing a thing for my friends and family.
Of course.
So I want all my friends and family to come over and eat for free. I think that's more fun than doing a big event like that where it's, you know.
And I don't know, there's so many of them that go on in London as well, and I think one of the most reliable things to learn about the restaurant industry is genuine word of mouth, I guess. Yeah, and as long as it kind of gets word of mouth goes round, because we've spoken to a lot of people who've opened up restaurants or have worked here and everything like that, and 9 times out of 10 it is just based on, well, I've heard here is good and I've seen it on some friend's Instagram, instead of it being the overly inflated kind of tons of people come here and then they forget about it the next week type of stuff.
Well, I haven't even started promoting it yet online. I've been told not to yet, so I'm actually only allowed to start promoting it tomorrow, so I haven't even shared it on my own Instagram or anything yet, and it's kind of launched for you yet. But we're booked for 2 weeks.
Already?
2 weeks fully booked out. First 2 weeks opening.
Wow.
It's booked.
And are you offering a soft offer at the start?
We're offering 50% off on the 5th to 11th off all food. So soft launch period. And then official launch is after the 12th. It's cool.
So many launches all at once, isn't it? It's like we're gonna launch on the 2nd, then we're opening on the 2nd, we're doing a soft one, then a medium soft one.
It gets confusing. It was cool, like it's that once we went, they were like, so I'm dealing with Sauce Communications, the PR company, so they're just doing little bits of press for me out here for the restaurant just to make sure that we're busy. And like they were releasing the press release actually today. But they were like even delighted that we got, it's just word of mouth. Actually, I've been just telling everybody. It's Wildflower, we're in the market, you know, it's in a shipping container. Come eat with us. So
What else is kind of in this market area? Because it's quite a large amount of space.
They've got Miguel Barkley, who's got like a pizza place. So he's got Miguel's Pizza.
Are they £1?
I don't know. They might be. I actually must have asked him that. Yeah. He took a video of me. I videoed him signing his lease, and he videoed me signing my lease. It's funny. It was so funny. He's really nice. Yeah. I think he's so lovely.
Yeah.
But I actually must have asked him that if it's £1 pizza. I didn't really. Maybe it's £1 a slice.
Or maybe it's £1 lease. Who knows?
£1 lease. Hey, you wouldn't know.
Wish.
So he's there. You have just quite a good bit of things. There's falafel. There's any amount of food there. They've got proper fish and chips like right beside us, which I'm just going to be eating out of every day. You've got a lot of kind of street food vendors. And they'll move and they'll swap. You know, the one thing about those kind of vendors is they'll always change and chop and stuff as well. So,
and as a model, we've seen it working, as we mentioned earlier on, in Pop Brixton, that a lot of people, there's a lot of people who are like, we're here for the long run, and then there's other people who are like, it's a small term, test it out before moving into a bigger place or all that. It's a completely different scene to the Irish one in that way.
It's true. Even there's a guy actually taking a long term unit, his first one. He's done Pop Bricks, and it's Lord of the Wings, I think it's called. And he's like 25. I was like, that's incredible. You're 25 and you're opening your own place.
How
like,
old are you?
28.
That much different.
You're younger
than me.
When I was 25, like my head was not in that space. Honest to God, it's amazing. It just like a couple of years later, and I was like, different headspace, different mind frame altogether. Back 25, I was like, no way would I have even had the intelligence to open a place. No way. And I was like, this guy's has opened several places. It's incredible.
He clearly has a drive.
Yeah. What was it that made you go? Because obviously you've, how many years have you been doing this? So we're about 14, is it?
Yeah, well, worked as a chef from 14 till about 23, I think it was 23, 24. And restaurants.
Yeah.
And did the like, I, to be honest, I had a flight booked.
Yeah.
This is the funniest. I had a flight booked and visa got for Australia. And a week before I was asked to do the late lunch live.
Wow. That,
yeah, it's a week before. And I stayed. I just stayed in Ireland. Yeah, I was actually leaving with all my chef friends to go to, we were going to go to Melbourne because the food scene was there. It was good. Mm. And also the hours in Australia are a lot less and there's a bit of better pay.
Yeah.
So we were all leaving at that stage to, you know, go work as, you know, chefs and chef de parties or hopefully one day become a head chef. That was kind of the goal. Mm. The TV thing just kind of happened like that. It was a recommendation from a friend of my dad's, Joe Shannon, who's the head chef of the Radisson Blu. He does Ireland AM. Yeah. So he recommended me to go forward for it. So I'll always thank him day in, day out to it. And it just kind of started from that. Yeah.
What year was that?
Ooh, it's about, is it 5 years ago? Five,
six? I think the incarnations of the late lunch live to the 7 o'clock show to 6 o'clock show. Because we were the chefs on the very first 6 o'clock show. That they had after they did the time change because of Coronation Street. Wasn't it? Yeah, that sounds
it
right.
It was 6, wasn't it? Yeah, it was. Yeah.
They moved from 7 to 6 because they lost the soaps and then got them back and it was like, it's at 6 now.
Yeah. I've been doing it now. I've been doing that show 5 years, I think it is.
Yeah, that was
5.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. So.
And in that's that, mad. Like, obviously there was a moment where you're doing this and you're busy on the circuit of demos and cookbook and everything like that. What was the moment where you went, place?
I always did want always, my own. I always did. I've even since even when I was going to Australia, I was like, I'd love to have my own place. Or even when I was doing TV and stuff, I was like, I'd love to have my own place. I think it's just that sustainable thing of you can back up then what you're showing people. It's that one thing of you're doing TV and you're cooking on TV and people are like, well, who's this guy? Like, you know, one thing I always had going against me was I looked so young. Like, you know, so people were like, who is this fresh-faced guy coming along? Who the hell does he think he is? Sure, he's no experience. He's way too young to be a chef or whatever. That was always one thing I've always got throughout the whole, even to this day. So I always felt like the restaurant piece is like the piece that are like, oh, he has his own restaurant. Like, he must be, you know, somewhat okay, you know, if you have a successful restaurant. I've always felt like having a successful restaurant, sustainable, that's long term there for the long haul is where I wanted that, you know. So I want that long haul destination. I said this to an interview in Derry Clark back nearly 5 years ago when we were doing an interview for a little piece. It's like, he's like, what type of restaurant? I was like, I don't want one until maybe I'm 28, 29. So I do want a restaurant. But I want it to be small. I also don't want very many seats. And I just want it to be there for the long run, you know? Mm. So that's kind of how I feel about here. I want it there for good. And just to be like a destination. Yeah.
And like also opening your own place young, I think youth is an advantage.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is actually. You learn, you kind of mold and you learn along the way. Everything is brand new to me. Like even alcohol license, I have to stand up in a hearing for an alcohol license. I was like in court and I was like, what? It's like, what the hell?
Seriously?
Yeah.
That works.
Yeah. Well, like it got declined once, so that was another issue I had. It's like alcohol license they put everyone's alcohol licenses together all in one book.
Yeah.
So I was put in with some bars and everyone's alcohol license got declined. So now we're doing us as individuals.
Imagine.
I think for the first week we won't even be able to sell wine. Because I won't have a license, because the hearing is literally that week. So I'll have to go to court that week as well to stand up and go, give me a license, I want to sell wine.
It's a great paparazzi opportunity here. Chef Adrian Martin arrives at court. It's like, oh, what did he do? Oh, he's just getting, he just wants a bit of wine.
Sell wine.
It is essential though, so
I need that license.
So what we're doing is the people that are booked for the first week, I think we're ringing them up and we're like, BYOB. Bring YOB, bring your own, like, because there's nothing we can do about it, you know. Yeah, it's everything, there's so much to it. Like, there's getting tables.
Also, like, I haven't a real caveman on tables, though. I knew we'd get to this.
I
found a website, right, that does MDF cut to whatever shape size you want. And MDF is actually so, so cheap.
Yeah.
I was like, why would I spend, like, a grand per table when you can buy all your tables for 150 quid?
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, you know, why not?
It's only a table at the end of the day, you know?
So I was pure delighted with myself.
Yeah.
There's me, like, wheeling all my tables up to my apartment in the lift, and this guy, like, people are looking at me going, what is this dude at? You know?
I'm opening up a restaurant in my apartment.
Every time I hear MDF, I think of changing rooms back then, back in the 90s when everything was made with MDF. But, you know,
it has its use, though. It's cheap.
Yeah, it's quick.
Yeah. It is quick, yeah. It is cheap and quick. And then, like, other things, like, I've been a potter. Mm. I found a potter that makes plates.
Mm.
So she's been absolutely amazing. So she's making, at the moment, currently, she's making them is 8 different types of plates for me. She's making 20 of each as well. Wow. So she's local in the area. Mm. So I'm getting her to make all the plates for us as well.
Nice.
I think it's cool, like, to be able to use that kind of stuff, you know?
And it gives a flavour of the area. And, you know, come on, it's Camden. It's, like, one of the most creative, artsy... hipster. I don't actually know what's a hipster. It's not hipster. Shut up, Russell.
I think it's eclectic and it has a really unique energy in London.
Mm. Yeah.
There isn't any other place that has the same energy, people, culture as here.
There's so much mix of people. I've got punks walking down the street. Mm. You've got goths. You've got, like, everything in one roof, which I love, you know? Mm. So, like, me back in the day when I was in school, me with my lip piercing, going around with my mohawk on me, red hair, pink hair, God knows what, I used to play drums and band, all that kind of stuff. I was like, this is great. I love it.
I'm home.
Yeah. It's like, just don't look like that anymore. That's me on the inside, you know?
It's coming out. It's all still in there.
Yeah.
You just hear Miran O'Connell now going, Chef Adrian's in the kitchen. Looks a bit different. London and Camden's changed him.
Yeah.
He's a fag hanging out of his mouth, a lip piercing and a mohawk. Yeah. He's turning into Amy Winehouse.
I used to get in so much trouble in school for that thing. I had a big ring.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with Blink 182 growing up.
So
Tom DeLonge was like my hero. Mm. I actually went to see them, his new band, Angels and Airs, there in Seattle last September. So I'm still obsessed.
Yes, I remember you watched that and I was like, oh my God, I didn't realise
this. I'm still obsessed, But the ring, anyway, used to get in so much trouble for having it in school. So they used to make me, like, take it out and have to put, like, a little plastic thing in it.
Gosh,
yeah. So it was horrible,
yeah.
My party trick was I could squirt water out of it perfectly. That was my party trick back in the day.
I don't think I have that on my nose one, though. No.
I don't think you should even try it.
No, I've always said ever since I've got... Well, you used to have it done.
Yeah.
Then as soon as you took yours out, I got mine done.
I think they're cool.
Yeah.
They are cool.
Yeah.
I think so.
Get it again.
It's still there. It's
Yeah.
It'll be there forever. Yeah. Because it can still put, like... Because it was quite big, you can still put things in it. Yeah.
Sounds so wrong.
I can just have this image of you being like, I got my wine license. Squirting out of your
wine coming out.
Here's a party trick. Is there anything in your career that you feel you could have done slightly differently or that you feel hasn't gone the way you hoped?
There's loads of things. Like, so the even to my latest book. So my first book came out. It was a massive seller, commercially wise, Fake Away. Did really, really well. Every mother has it in their handbag. You use it as like a Bible nearly. It's so funny. Second book published called Create Beautiful Food at Home. Wasn't half as successful. That's on the back of listening actually to a lot of chefs and a lot of people saying that, you know, they... why don't I do a fine dining book? Why don't I do this? And that's from listening to that. And I actually felt like, you know, I was very, very passionate about it and I loved it and everything, but it wouldn't have done half as well as my first book. And that's the truth of it. Like, you know, what else would I have done? Like, you look back, I really loved everything I've done. I'm living in an absolute dream bubble. Like, so I'm like, I've loved everything I've ever done. Like, all the support I've got from people through the years, like, it's been incredible. Like, you know, so when you look back, you know, you could point out and say, I wish I did things differently, whatever. But to be honest with you, I just appreciate people's support and, you know, I just got on with it and just enjoyed it. And I mean, like, most people always want the next thing, the next thing, next thing. And I am like that to a certain extent, but I've learned actually how to enjoy things in a moment. Mm. So instead of looking for the next big thing, just embrace it and enjoy it while you're in it, because it's once in a lifetime opportunity. Like, this, like, I've published 2 books. There's very few people in the world that'll ever publish a book. Mm. So it's kind of like, geez, I've done it. Like, it's incredible. Yeah, so.
And I think actually, especially with the books, you have 2 titles that are very, very different to each other, which also shows not just that you obviously have 2 books to your name, but you also have 2 different, completely different styles, 2 different audiences. And especially the second one in relation to what you're about to do here.
It really fits. It does. It fits in so nicely. Yeah. Like, that book as well was so fun to do. Mm. Like, my mom did all the dishes. Mm. We did it in my apartment in Dublin, and we had just a photographer and a prop stylist.
Yeah.
So all the plates that are plated and that is all myself, just hand done. And yeah, I just loved every moment of that. Yeah.
And so case in point, possible to do at home.
Yeah, it is. It's possible to do at home. Yeah, yeah. Some mess that kitchen was on.
Always hate the cleanup afterwards. Oh. It all looks brilliant in the shot, but around it, in the kitchen, everything's everywhere.
Speaking of at home, chefs are often the most greediest people when it comes to food and eating terrible things often. Yeah. Are you the same?
Are you a glutton in that way? When I worked in restaurants, you don't want to cook because you're cooking 24/7 early. So, yeah, I would have eaten terribly. We lived in, actually, when I worked at Nevin for 6 years, we lived in Black Lion, so I rented a house there, so we never cooked in it, ever. Mm. We just used to just order takeaway or whatever as well. I've become a bit more conscious, actually, when you hit, like, 27, I was like, jeez, I was like, started putting on weight. I was like, it's the first time ever in my life I ever put on weight, because I normally have a really fast metabolism. So I was like, geez, I've actually got to watch what I eat, you know?
Yeah.
So I've actually become more conscious. Like, Fiona, my girlfriend's obsessed with the gym. Mm-hmm. So she'll work out in the gym 5 days a week. And she'll come home from work, and she's religiously, she'll arrive in, I'll have dinner ready for the two of us. Mm-hmm. She'll come in, and then she'll head off to the gym. Mm. And she'll spend maybe an hour or something, even as 2 hours in it. And then she'll come back. Yeah, she's dedicated to it, really, really dedicated to it. Whereas I'm not. Like, I'll go through phases. I'll run for maybe a month. Mm. And then I'll be like, okay. And then I give up and I go back again. So it depends. Yeah, it depends on what I'm doing as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, with eating wise, I love just making simple, simple things at home. Like, as simple as possible, something quick, something easy. Lots of chicken dishes, lots of steak, love steak, can't beat it, you know, so yeah, that's really it,
You're obviously a young chef and you've trained pretty recently. How do you find the training process at the moment? Is it up to scratch? Could it improve? Because skills are at an all-time
low.
Low isn't the word, but as in, like, skills are hard to come by at the moment, in terms of chefs. So how do you feel the training is at the moment?
I mean, like, it's not quick. Like, it's not a fast process to do. So I train for, like, I was in college for 4 years, but you still train for maybe 7 or 8, I'm still training. Like, I'm still training as a chef, you know? So, like, you're always learning as a chef. The training process is, I found the smaller colleges to be way more, I suppose, intuitive to do, instead of all that theory work, which is fine, look, but at the end of the day, it's a craft that you use your hands for.
Yeah.
So I found the more kind of practical the colleges were, the better. I went to Enniskillen. I did it 2 days a week, Mondays and Tuesdays, for 2 years to become a professional chef. It's an MVQ level 3 in professional cookery, is what it's called. And it's actually, I found it great. It's right beside home. So I used to have a little car, I used to drive to it. And yeah, like, it was intensive, but you start off your first days, instead of coming in and getting induction, our first day was how to break down a chicken. That was our first day in college, you know, and it's things like that, how to make chicken liver parfait. And then you go through every type of kind of area of it.
Yeah.
I then went to Kitty Beggs for a year, and I studied, it's like BA in Culinary Arts. Mm-hmm. And that really expresses into, say, product development. We did French, so which I loved, actually. Mm-hmm. I hated French in school. I absolutely despised it in school. But when it came to food, I absolutely loved it. Yeah. It was so weird. It was like...
It's like applied French. Yeah, it's like I couldn't give a hoot about, you know, where anything is. But food, when you put it into context, I guess it gives a different meaning to it all.
It does, yeah, yeah. And it's like the language of love. You know, it sounds great when you say something in French and food. Yeah. You know, it sounds deadly, like...
Yeah.
But yeah, I did Kitty Beggs. Gabriel McSherry was amazing. Yeah. I had him for like savory, and then I had Nolan Boyle for pastry. Mm-hmm. And I did loads of competitions when I was in Kitty Beggs. I did Chef Ireland competitions. I remember there's a great photograph actually down in the college of I had like 8 plaques. So I did like 8 competitions. So I did 4 in a row one day. So it's literally like one competition after another at it as well. I used to love competing at those kind of things. Really enjoyed that. Then I went to DIT and did a year in baking and pastry arts management.
Yeah.
So it was, I kind of took this notion, I wanted to specialize in something. So I specialized in pastry that year. So we did wedding cakes. We did every bread under the sun. You should see the recipe folder I have from there. It is incredible. Yeah. Like, it's amazing, all the different breads that we came out with. So it was really enjoyable. Our first day actually there was making batch bread, which I know you have a lovely recipe for you there as well. It's so good.
So nice.
So we used that, the college had massive pizza ovens, so they're all, or baker's ovens, so huge ovens. Yeah. And we used to have to go around in all white, so our uniform was all white and our shoes were white, and people used to stand out like a mile away from the crowd. It was so funny.
Yeah.
But it's in the basement of Kevin Street that I Derek O'Brien was my lecturer there. So he's like famous for it, for pastry there. No, it was a nice college. That was kind of my basic training. Then only went to Bon Appetit, and I worked in Bon Appetit. I had to do desserts for 2 restaurants. So he had a Michelin star upstairs, and then he had the brasserie downstairs. So I used to come in on a Monday and Tuesday, do all the prep for the 2 restaurants as much as I could get prepped up, and I would do service in one or the other during the week. So the restaurant opened on Wednesday, and I'd do lunch then. It was only open for lunch on a Sunday, so I would do lunch every week. So it was intense, to be honest. It was like 8 to 8 o'clock in the morning. Finished at 1 in the morning there. Like, it was intense. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I found that tough. I did find that really, really tough. But yeah, it was, again, I learned an awful lot there in a short space of time that I could take with me. And yeah, it's a great little recipe book.
I'd say so.
It's brick, more like, right, what it sounds
like. Yeah, it's intense. Like, there's one, like, I remember I used to have 4 mixers on the go all at once. Like, so one of you, massive one in the corner making breads. Other ones were mixing, like, pavlova for the brasserie. You know, the next one would be making, like, we used to do, like, this. It used to be the most difficult dish to get right. It was, like, a cannelloni. So it was, like, it's a citrus cannelloni. So it's like you make a jelly first. So you set a jelly flat on a tray. So it has to be perfectly flat. So the surface that you're putting it on, it had to be clean. First, you wet the tray, you cling film the tray. So it has to be perfectly level. Mm-hmm. You pour on your jelly and you leave it set. And then what you do is you make this mousse. So the mousse was set with like it's a softball caramel. You mix this in the KitchenAid until it turns into like this lovely citrusy mousse.
Mm-hmm.
And you pipe, so you had to perfectly pipe all along the jelly, and you had to roll the jelly over this thing. But the thing about the mousse was, you had to leave that mousse exactly 35 minutes in the fridge before you could pipe it. Otherwise, this thing was wrecked.
Yeah.
So you can imagine if you mess it, like you go over it by a minute, it gets air pockets. You go under it by a couple of minutes, it's just messed. So it was such a precise kind of procedure.
So
as well as trying to do everything else for the whole place. Yeah, so that was intense.
So that's not going on your menu here then,
though? No, definitely not. Our menu here is, I have a dish that I love, is rice pudding souffle.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so it's like, we make, I call it kind of childhood memories, because ambrosia cream rice was like, great thing back in the day. So we make a rice pudding with vanilla, fresh vanilla pods,
milk, just very, very simple, lots of sugar, kind of sweet. Mm. And what we do is you boil it up until it comes to its soft consistency, and then you blitz it. Mm. So basically, instead of making a creme patisserie, you make a base creme patisserie just from the rice and the cream mixture. Wow. And then what you do is you cool this, then you place it over a bain-marie, and then you whisk your egg whites for your souffle to order. So your egg whites are done to order. Mm-hmm. You fold through your creme patisserie until you flavor it in the oven, 12 minutes in the oven. Make sure that your souffle mold is buttered upwards. What else is there? Sometimes we grate chocolate. So if you grate frozen chocolate around it, it's delicious. And then the way of getting the souffle, the rice, perfectly, is they never tell you this in videos, is if you get yourself a mini spatula, is you run the spatula. So you put mixture up about halfway, and in the middle, you run the spatula all around to the outsides of it. So it spreads it perfectly, which gives you no air pockets. So it goes up perfectly. So, and also, you know, your thumb around the side, you know, scrape the top and four. That's kind of thing. So the air pockets is the key, like getting rid of air pockets.
Of course.
But that, that recipe's going on there. We're doing like a passion fruit sorbet with that as well. So it's quite nice. It's really nice. Yeah, lots of different dishes. Yeah. We've burdock on the menu. You can get burdock at the moment. Yeah. So we're smoking it. We have a big green egg. So we're going to smoke in that. And we're making it into puree. And then we're doing a very simple massive scallop, just seared scallop. You can't beat it, I think. You know, something like seared scallop, just delicious. We've short rib of beef, we've turbot. So the turbot dish is we slice baby courgette really, really thin. It's actually very like 11 Madison Park, actually, the way they do it. So it's like slice the courgette really, really thin, blanch it for 10 seconds in boiling water, refresh it into iced water, and you lay it on top of your turbot like scales. So, and then what we do is so you sous vide it. It takes literally 7 minutes in sous vide. And we blow torch it just before it hits the plate. So it's like a little torch on top, And that's done with like a spicy broth. So I kind of take things from traveling. So I came across a spicy broth in Vancouver, and I was obsessed with it. So like coconut milk, lemongrass, ginger. They had a little bit of tomato paste in it. And what else did they have in it? They had fish sauce, soya, they had loads of all these kind of things mixed. And what I've done is I've taken that and we sieve it. You add xanthan gum to it. So you blitz in xanthan gum a little bit to thicken it. And then we put it into one of those gas guns and you gas it. And it turns out like a little meringue in the plate of sauce. It's lovely,
That sounds so gorgeous.
So it's things like that we'll be doing on the menu.
This menu has me drooling.
You had me at rice pudding and things, but it sounds so good.
Yeah. Lots of things like homemade breads. Then the breads starting off is an olive tapenade and then a smoked bacon and onion bread. So very simple. Tapenade's very simple. It's just blitzed up olives with loads of garlic. And then smoked bacon is literally like you burn your butter, so brunoisette. You burn smoked bacon almost in this burnt butter, and you add in some onions, and you blitz this till a pure, smooth puree consistency. Pass through chinois, and then we literally lay your bread out flat, and you just literally brush the puree over top. And then what we do is we roll it like a Swiss roll, so each bite you get a little bit of the smoked bacon and onion. So that's the other dish we're doing. And the breads, we're making breads every day. I love bread, like, you know,
obsessive. Of course we do.
Can't beat bread. Soda bread as well. We're doing the soda bread, the lemon and thyme soda bread. I love soda bread. You can't open a restaurant without being from Ireland and not do soda bread.
Now you get your passport taken off you for that. I've heard rumours around the city.
Kerrygold butter as well. Naturally, Kerrygold butter, Kerrygold,
Do you like Guinness?
No. God. I tried.
I thought you were joking.
No, I tried.
This is terminated.
Okay, so
I was going to say, because you're living in London and you're Irish, have you seen that account of shite Guinness in London?
Look, we do get the best stuff. There's one place I will say I will drink Guinness in is at home, is in Molly Maguire's. I better give them a shout out. It's in Ballyconnell. They keep their barrels right underneath the tap. So it's a tiny little, it's an old man's pub. Yeah. Like, you go in there, sit in, the two guys are from Dublin. We always say, oh, we go to Molly's to shout abuse, you know? So that's basically, you can shout and roar all you want in the place. It's great and no one cares. Yeah. That's what I love about it. But yeah, I think we get the good stuff, don't we? Mm. Yeah, we keep the best stuff for ourselves.
And we know how to pour it properly.
Oh, yeah, we know how to pour.
But if you do ever come across any, that account is embarrassing to see because a Foster's glass with a head of Guinness going, it's just so long.
My sister is obsessed with Guinness. Like, she is obsessed. Like, total obsession with Guinness.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you go to her apartment. Like, my sister lives three floors above me in Dundrum.
Oh, yeah.
So I keep everyone close, you know. But
is that why you came to London?
Yeah, get away from her, yeah. But you go up to her apartment, like, just during the week. It's like friends. You just, they keep the door open and just walk in.
Yeah.
They're like, sit there, like, she's obsessed. She loved cans of Guinness on the go. She loved going out. She's drinking pints of Guinness the whole time.
No bother to her.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah, yeah. She's like, I'm the only man in this family. You know? You know? So, yeah. Oh, she's great. Yeah, no.
Brilliant.
The last question I'm going to ask is, you're obviously going to fly the flag for Irish ingredients over here in some way. It's kind of half and half question. Do you think the UK understands Irish food? And can you explain your understanding of Irish food?
I suppose, like, it's become, Irish food scene has become incredibly popular. You've seen a big take to
Nordic.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, that's the word I was looking for. So Nordic was quite, like, you know, the thing. I think, like, Irish is kind of at that point now where people see it as being like that. Like, you ask any of the chefs about the restaurants in Dublin or in Ireland or anywhere in Ireland, like even at Nier in Galway, Loam, you know, like, he won a sustainability award at the Michelin Awards there recently. The Greenhouse got 2 stars. We got our first restaurant, like, in Kildare. You have a restaurant just won 2 stars, literally only opened like 3 months. So, like, the food scene in Ireland is incredible. You see Jamie Oliver is even trying to open an Irish restaurant in Dublin.
Heard that.
You know, so it is becoming, like, that thing where Irish cuisine, people are trying to mimic it now, and they're trying to, you know, do it. Irish food for me is kind of like, it's not like what they perceive it to be. Oh, corned beef and leprechauns running around feeding people and things like that, you know. Or even, like, I was reading up recently, it's like, you gotta go to these, if you're doing a food tour of Ireland, you gotta go to this place for what is it, seafood chowder. And I was like, where? I was like, never heard of it. Like, what is going on? So the tourism guides are not up to date with what the food scene is. Maybe some are, but, like, there's so many places you can tour Ireland. Like, you've got down in Cork, he was in Cavan for Ireland Securance, you got Eddie Atwell, who's doing incredible things with foraging all around the place. He takes people out in boats down in Cork to forage all around the area and fish and things. Like, all this kind of this style of stuff. Excuse my phone, sorry. Damn, I have 2 phones. I'm like a drug dealer.
You're mad. Typical businessman.
Yeah. I'm like a drug dealer going around.
Burn your phone.
Yeah. Oh, you and everyone in Canada.
I mean, yeah. But the Irish food scene is, it's good. You've got everything. We're an island. Mm. Like, it's amazing how many ingredients you can get on one island. Like, you have absolutely everything there. Mm. It's just about shouting about it. And, you know, making sure everyone knows about it, that, you know, Irish food is there for the long haul. It's not just corned beef and cabbage and spuds. It's, you know, next level. It's a cuisine in itself. And let's hope that it spreads worldwide more and more.
Adrian's restaurant is called Wildflower, located at Buck Street Market, just a few feet away from Camden Town Tube Station. Reservations are open now via the website at wildflowerrestaurant.co.uk, and you can follow Adrian himself to see how he is getting along in London town on his Instagram, which is at Chef Adrian M.
On the next episode of Chew the Fat, we're back out west for something a little different. We've covered seafood and aquaculture over the past few series of Chew the Fat, but we've never explored the world of abalone.
a delicacy revered in far-flung parts of the world, but less appreciated here. Connemara Abalone and Mungo Murphy's Seaweed are two businesses run by mother and daughter team Cindy and Sinead O'Brien, and we're very excited to share their story with you next time.